Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today we have two special guests in studio, which is very unusual. Mike Cantu. Mike is a real estate entrepreneur, property manager, wholesaler, builder, teacher, and mentor who has purchased a huge number of homes at a discount from people he talks to over the phone and rarely meets. And Tony Alvarez, real estate entrepreneur, property manager, teacher, mentor, who buys properties mostly by creating relationships with agents who control lots of inventory. So we welcome both of you.
Thanks, Bruce.
Thank you very much, Bruce.
To actually kind of a really special show. I'm excited about what we just talked about at lunch, and I'm excited about the Millionaire Maker. I'm really thankful that you guys can be there for the audience and participate. It means a lot to me. It really does. Mike, you and I have known each other the longest. When did we first meet? Because I know we knew of each other, I think, before we met.
Over 20 years.
Okay, over 20 years ago.
We passed 20-year mark, I think, long ago, Bruce.
What was your motivation to get into real estate?
I can't stand being told what to do and grew up with military discipline with 9 people in an 1,100 square foot house. My dad was career military, ruled it with a heavy hand, and I was constantly being told what to do. And to this day, I can't stand for other people to tell me what to do. I have enough stuff to do on my own and usually fill up my day with my own agenda. And when somebody tries to wedge something else in there, most of the time I am not interested. So it's out. It was born from wanting to live life on my terms. Work when I was ready to work, never been afraid to work, but just not being told what to do.
Did you come from a real estate background at all?
Oh, not at all.
Okay.
In fact, I heard, probably starting at 14 years old when I was trying everything under the sun, my gardening route, everything else to earn some money, my dad, every day I heard it. Learn a trade, save your money. Learn a trade, save your money. Multiple times throughout the day. Learn a trade, save your money.
Okay. Were your parents any of self-employed?
No, my dad was career military, and my stepmother was a legal secretary.
Okay, were you? Do you feel like you were raised in a wealthy family at all?
Oh no, not at all. We didn't have washer dryer hookups, no air conditioning, no pool jacuzzi, and our house was just bare bones construction. The 212 pitch roof without even an attic and a gravel roof, and a wall heater with no thermostat. It was either on high or low.
Was becoming wealthy important to you?
It wasn't so much the wealthy, it was the freedom that I was after to do life on my terms.
Okay, so that's the why part.
That's always been the driver, is to not be told what to do and be comfortable.
Okay. Tony, you and I met maybe almost 10 years ago now. When did we meet? It was at an apartment association meeting where you came up and talked to me after I
got done speaking. You were speaking at that meeting, and that was...
03, 04-ish?
Yeah, around there, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what was your motivation for getting involved in real estate?
Money.
Money?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was that was the primary. I mean, right out of the gate. It was I was broke, unemployed, and I didn't have any prospects because I dropped out of high school, and... So, you know, a guy came on the radio, said any idiot can make it in real estate, and I was that's how I identified myself. So I saw it as an opportunity that I wouldn't otherwise have.
So you didn't come from a real estate background either?
No, no. We came to this country from Cuba, right. And when I was 5 years old, so my parents, my dad was a clerk of court in Cuba, and my mom was a teacher, but they both became janitorial experts when they came here to this country, or sanitary engineers, as they call them. Okay. You know, so no, we didn't have any of that, but. You know, my whole motivation was we had nothing basically except the needs, the basic needs growing up. And so I was kind of reminded of that quite often in different situations as a kid.
Like Mike had been told the formula, or you were being told what box that you should go to. That's basically how we're going to refer to this.
Learn a trade.
You know, yeah, the box is learn a trade because that means... safety and stability, and you'll be in, you know, at the end of your life, you'll be, I don't know about content, but you'll have cared for the basics, I guess.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of the advice that we're given is certainly coming from a really good heart.
Yeah.
In other
yeah.
words, this is how to take care of yourself.
Well, we have that in common. I mean, we were both told to go to learn a trade, but only in a kind of a different way. The first time I ever heard about a trade was... when I was in the eighth grade, we were getting set to pick a high school that would prepare you for college. And Sister Marie, who was really nice, one of my favorite nuns, called my mom in, and as I stood between them, she said, you need to find Anthony a trade school to put him in, a high school, because he's not that bright, and he's not really college material. Now, she wasn't doing that. You know, every time I tell that story, people go, oh. Well, you know, coming from a teacher's point of view at that point in time, the way things were, she was trying to be very helpful. She was trying to do something for Anthony that she felt was going to help Anthony in his life. And, you know, unbeknownst to her, I didn't like to get my hands dirty. So, you know, all that trade school stuff didn't work, except drafting classes, which taught me about, you know, how to draw your own home and stuff like that. But I also got that from my dad. My dad was, you know, my dad in his loving way was of the opinion that, you know, I'm not the brightest bulb in the family. And he made no bones about telling me that with his Spanish accent, you know, in English or in Spanish, you know. You better get a job at the factory back east where we grew up. It was the factory, and, you know, you better get a job at Malden Mills and stick with it because, you know, you're not as bright as your brothers.
When you guys were growing up, and this is, you know, everybody in the audience is going to have this experience or a comment made by their parent, like Mike had said, you know, it was mentioned to him constantly. Do you feel like you were more influenced on the example that you saw every day on what somebody did or what they
good question.
What they told you? That would be a good box.
Yeah, that's a good question.
See, I have endless respect for my dad, and I always will. But as a kid, I thought, I don't want this to be my life when I'm an adult. I don't want to live in this neighborhood. I don't want any part of this. I had much bigger plans for myself.
And what was this? What was the germ of that? Where did that come from, the seed of that?
Friends at school that lived on the proverbial other side of the tracks. I thought I had it going on first, second, third, fourth grade. It was somewhere around fifth grade when I went to the upscale neighborhood and discovered several things. One, central air conditioning in the middle of summertime. Never felt anything like it. That was, I thought, I'm going to have some of this. And as I got exposed to some of the upgrades and luxuries of life, I thought I started piecing together an ideal scenario and said, I want some of this, some of that, and some of this. And not a single one of those things exists in the neighborhood that I grew up in.
And you were about how old when that was going on?
Early teens.
Okay. And that's unusual, right? I mean, most of the time people are not thinking about anything other than, can I, you know,
now, I had some experiences prior to being 10 years old to where there was definite plans being made by the time I was 10 years old to have better circumstances than I was living in.
Okay. I mean, any of your friends do that too? I mean, or you were like the lone Mohican?
No, I was always the lone ranger.
Okay. Yeah, they're probably going, what?
I've had goal cards since I was in my late teens, and I used to have a front seat of a Volkswagen Bug. It was a high back chair in the corner of my bedroom, and that's where you sat morning and night to read these goal cards, and I'd read them out loud and kind of mumble to myself because I didn't want people to overhear me. But at the same time, I like to read out loud because you're engaging more of your senses, physical, audio, and verbal, versus just the visual part of it. And I would mumble through these goal cards, and that started way back as a teenager, and I found experienced the power of goal setting and the constant auto-suggestion, all of a sudden the stuff coming full circle and becoming part of my life to where I figured that one out early on.
That's pretty amazing. It never dawned on me until 28 or 29 when I met Jim Rohn. You know, that was a whole new world to me.
Yeah.
So, Tony, what about yourself as far as what the original question was, as far as the observation of how things are going and what you're supposed to do?
Look, I'm an immigrant. That's the bottom line. And when I came to this country, I speak English just like you guys, and that was not by accident. I mean, if I didn't get the accent out of my English speaking, I was going to get a beating every time I opened my mouth in front of a group of kids that didn't speak the same way. Mm. And that's what stems from. When you're young, kids, you know, they do all kinds of weird stuff. And if you're the Martian or the foreigner, the outsider, everyone else is, you know, part of the norm. You're reminded of that immediately. I just told you the story about recognizing I didn't know I was poor until I realized I had on black tie shoes and everybody else had penny loafers, and you know we couldn't afford penny loafers for Tony, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a reminder. Now, just I want to clear something up. You know, I grew up in a neighborhood where those same people that identified me as the enemy, so to speak, and I them to a certain extent, although I wanted to be part of that group. they kind of helped me to kind of forge and become aware of my identity. And they probably have a lot to do with also making me aware of the fact that I didn't quit. So, you know, all of those situations, I think, in life have a way of reminding you of who you really are at your core, or kind of like bringing you in touch with that. When Mike is speaking and he's talking about what motivated him, you know, I can identify with some of the stuff he's saying, not exactly the same way. Tony wasn't sitting around with cards writing goals, I can tell you that. Mine was about surviving, period. So it's a different way of, it's a different life, but you really are getting to the same thing. It's what's inside of a person, of an individual, that makes them overcome whatever comes at them.
You know, in this multi-millionaire maker, we're going to talk about creating a new box for yourself.
Right.
When we go backwards and we look at a box that we found not acceptable, we have to go back further and see if, in fact, our folks created a box that was bigger than they had been raised with. In other words, there were things, obviously, that happened for you when you came to a new country. That was a...
We were in a perpetual box. I mean, we're put in a box. I was put in a box by my parents' opinions, to a certain extent. My mom was completely the opposite. Anything you want to do in this life, you can do. So she was the most. She was like the rah-rah tambourine band with cymbals and everything behind all of us. My mom told us every single day on the way to school, you can become anyone who you want to become. You can do anything you want to do as long as you learn to love people first. We never understood that statement. We thought love meant, like in the movies, you kiss somebody in the mouth. So we thought mom was a little wacky.
Okay.
But over time, that started to make more sense. However, the box was everyone. The nuns have the box they're trying to put you in, right? My dad, to a certain extent, all trying to protect you, by the way.
Right. It wasn't mean-spirited.
No, not at all. Society itself, you know, hey, you got to go to college and you got to do this and you got to do that, and then you're going to be okay with yourself, right? So all of those things, I think, have a way of bringing out, because I remember, the only thing I remember was having a certain feeling inside of myself where, in spite of all those things, of all those opinions and stuff, there was something else that inside of me was apart from that. And that, I think, is the beginning of your own, what you identify with. Mm-hmm. You know, who are you, really?
Mike, oh, go ahead.
I have some comments on the box, too, because I long, long ago heard the term think outside of the box. And I remember when I heard that term, I thought, wait a minute, this world is a box. We live in a box. Most people get up and get in a box and drive to work, and then they go into their work, which is a box, and their whole existence is one box after another after another. And like we talked about at lunch, I love the concept of a box cutter. Just get out, cut the four corners of it, flatten it out, and expand your horizons.
When you said about what your dad did and you really wanted to change things, you wanted air conditioning and all those things, and yet you also said that you have a lot of respect for your dad. So those two can go together. You want a new box for yourself, but you're standing on a box that you're kind of proud of as well.
Yes.
Okay. And that had to do with what? What was inside that box that you went, I can adopt that and make it bigger?
My dad's philosophy on life, he's always been a happy person, claims to have never been bored 1 minute of his life. He's always busy. He has the worst case of arrested development I've ever seen at 83 years old. He still thinks he's in his 40s. He's a constant inspiration, extremely thrifty and frugal, to where I had watched him most of his life be debt-free and retire very, very comfortably. So a lot of the things that he passed on, life lessons and disciplines, I still adhere to today. And I thank him for that every day. But as far as the learn a trade, that was what he was exposed to, and
right,
figured that was the best route for his kids to take.
Right.
And I can't fault him for telling me that, because he was military all of his life. And the other option, he had told me early on, you wouldn't make it till 10 o'clock the first day of boot camp, so let's scratch that one. And that was back to the discipline and being told what to do. So we eliminated the military, and all that was left was a trade.
But to a certain extent, Bruce, that's what it kind of starts. Supposing his dad had never said, supposing Mike, your father never said to you, hey, do this, like my dad's saying, you got to go to the factory. The minute my dad said, you better get a job at the factory, I knew inside of me at a really deep level, that's not me. Now, not that I did take the job at the factory and I did try it for a while. I think I lasted 9 months, actually, which was pretty good. But I knew, I didn't know what I was going to do, but I knew I couldn't do that. That's not where I wanted to be. So that's, I guess, the thing is, you know, all of those suggestions and comments coming at you and people trying to put you in that box also are a way of freeing yourself from it, because they make you, if something inside you doesn't resonate with what they're saying or doesn't identify something different, completely the antithesis of what they're saying to you, it's almost like an uncomfortable feeling. That's not me. It doesn't mean that what they're doing, like my dad was proud of what he did working at Malden Mills. I never forget the time, because they work with cloth, you know, and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. He actually made a flag, an American flag, and brought it home to us, made out of the materials that he worked at home. That went up in our house because we thought, you know, I mean, if it wasn't for this country, where the hell would we be, you know? So,
and I guess that's what I was getting at. You know, that was a new box that they were trying to open for you as far as opportunity. Yeah. That's what parents, you know, usually do. They sit there and go, okay, you know, I'm going to work hard and the end of that is so you can go to college or you can have this or that.
But they also give you their fears.
Yeah, and sometimes they do go, okay, you know, in that movie Rudy, that was, to me, the moment of decision for Rudy when his dad really came to that, you know, sat down with him and said, oh, Rudy, you can't go to Notre Dame. Notre Dame is for rich kids, smart kids, great athletes. He said, it's not for a Rudiger. He said, you can have a great life working at the factory.
Exactly.
You know, and it wasn't done in a mean spirit at all. It was done with his arms around him basically saying, I'm trying to protect you from disappointment. And Rudy thought, no. And, you know, everybody knows the movie story. What's really impressive is all of his younger brothers graduated from college because he had opened a box they didn't know existed.
Right.
And that's a pretty cool ending to that.
Bruce, looking back, there was a big turning point in my late teenage years, somewhere around 17. I know I wasn't 18 yet. I had been out on my own for almost 2 years, was professional skateboarder on the Pepsi skateboard team, and I was exposed during that two-year period to more things that I had never seen, witnessed, lifestyles and things, and I just kept adding to the list of things that I wanted to be part of my life. And the big question that came about was, what do I want my life to look like? And I asked myself that in my late teens. What do I want it to look like in my 20s? I never thought about my 30s because I figured that was a long ways off. But I do remember asking myself, what do I want my life to look like? And I also remember going to my first real estate seminar, sitting there for 2 days, learning 101 ways to buy real estate with no money down, sitting next to my roommate on the way home. After 2 days, I asked him if he had any idea what that mortgage thing was, and he didn't know either. But when I called my folks together, because I had the plan, we were going to refinance their free and clear house, and they were going to turn over the proceeds to me so I could head down the road to real estate riches. And as I came over and gave my presentation to them, that was another turning point in my life, because my dad and I have a very similar sense of humor, and there's only been 3 times that I remember that he laughed at me. And when I gave that pitch to him, he started laughing so hard that he eventually rolled out of his chair onto the living room floor, and he's holding his stomach curled up in the fetal position, and I actually thought he was going to need oxygen. I became concerned for his well-being. Then he started pulling it together, lightened up. Then we made eye contact, and round two started again. And it was the round two that pissed me off, that he went through the whole thing again. I didn't even say goodnight. I remember just getting my notebook and walking out the door.
So you took that as not even a maybe. That was a no.
I took that as, watch this, Dad. You have no idea what you just did to me.
You know, okay, to me, that it's very interesting you bring that up, because I think until that happens, the steel of will seems to be absent. There's got to be some big reason where you just go, that is unacceptable. And every turning point in my life, I have sat there and been angry at something, either myself or what was just done, and go, never is that going to happen again.
I vowed to never give him another reason to laugh at me like that the way he did. And that night, he lit a fire inside of me that still burns to this day.
And you could just replayed the moment that I can see in your eyes. Mm-hmm. That is, and so it's interesting. The people that love us sometimes do exactly the opposite of what we want them to, but it worked. Yet they can change your entire life to do something completely different.
Yeah, reflecting back on that story, Bruce, I'm ready to spend the afternoon making deals and calling my dad and telling him about them.
Yeah, you know, I remember when you and I spoke one time and during lunch, and we brought up the idea of what would you do if you didn't have anything? And while we were discussing that, I could feel like the hair on my neck like going up. Like I had to get my game face on, because the first thing I had to do was, you know, find a residence or something.
Yeah.
So, the millionaire maker that we had last time, what stands out in your mind about that? Wow. It seemed to be a very special event.
Well, look, right out of the gate, what stands out in my mind more than anything else was what happened afterwards. There were people that attended that I met, that went on to become millionaires. That was the whole thrust of even the original Millionaire Maker that I can remember. I mean, people went there saying, I want something here. I want to learn something that's real, that I can apply immediately, that's really going to do something, you know.
And this is, just so everybody understands, this isn't just, it's going to be some real estate, because I've given the presenters some options there, but it's really about bringing the best person out of yourself.
But it always has been. I mean, let me rephrase that. The people that attended, there's a lot of people that attended there that were already in real estate. There's a lot of people that attended that I didn't know the difference between a deed of trust and, you know, their birth certificates, or, you know, but the ones that went on to make something, to do something. And they're the same ones that, by the way, stayed in touch with a lot of folks. They stayed in touch with me. I know they stayed in touch with Mike and with yourself. You know, there were folks that took it seriously and went, okay, I can use this and do something with this information, and went on to actually do it step by step by step and do it for themselves. So that's the part that I remember. Not only the event was fantastic. I mean, everything that happened there, I was, you know, I'm a big crybaby anyways whenever my emotions get triggered. But I remember being crying from the first, we watched the movie, you know, at the beginning, and I had never seen that movie, Rudy, before. And then I find out that I've spent a good portion of my time even speaking to him. I didn't realize who the guy was, you know, and he was asking me more questions about myself and complimenting me and stuff. So, but the aftermath, the watching of the changes in people's lives that were real, and some of those people have become business associates, you know, over the years, serious people.
Yes.
You know, that you can't say anything more than that. I mean, that's the value in whatever it is you do. What really happens after the fact? Does the information, is it worthwhile? Is it useful? And is it going to change lives, right? It's a combination of what they learned and what they chose to do.
Mike, what are your recollections of that?
The diversity of the speakers. That was the first thing that I noticed. As everybody told their story, yeah, I don't think he could have done a better job of picking out four opposite, pushed away, different people.
Yeah.
And I realized right then and there, under the great umbrella of real estate, anybody can carve out whatever it is thereafter, depending on their ability, efforts, and determination. That whatever you're capable of, if you come up with a plan, implement the plan, take action. As I always thought up until that point, everybody kind of does it the same. And that's not true. Everybody does it way different.
You know, that was the fun of orchestrating that those days, is because I realized, wow, this is pretty neat.
We all took notes. I remember that. I found myself, when Mike was done, I remember thinking, there's nothing to talk about. I mean, what am I going to do? No, I actually forgot when he was speaking what I had done myself, which was very different than what Mike had done in a lot of ways, you know. But I was so enthralled by all the stuff he was saying. I was like, I reinvented myself during his presentation.
Yeah.
Honestly, I reinvented myself right then and there.
Well, and the goal was for somebody in the audience is going to resonate with, I'm more like Mike, or I'm more like Tony,
right,
or I'm more like Jack, or, you know, and that has to go on when you say, you know what, I'm going to have to use the skills I bring to the table to my messed ability. We're out of time for this segment, but we're having a Millionaire Maker this July, and we have an exciting group of people, and I want people to go for their own benefit.
Really, without a doubt.
Thanks for joining us, and we'll do one more segment.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.